Blog Talk Radio.
Let's Talk Truth is designed to shine a light on that part of us that's hidden deep within us, and it stunts our growth. Truth is only truth if it lines up with the Word of God. Otherwise, it's merely our appearing, our appearing, our appearing.
If you really wanna talk, then let's talk truth. Hey. Any situation that you face can be talked through. No problem too big, there's no problem too small at all. Trying to maintain to keep from smashing through a wall. Heavy load up on your shoulders, trying hard not to fall. Situation after situation, throwing curveballs. Got you worried about your job, a word about your kids, a word about the things people said or what they did. Your husband ain't doing right, or maybe it's your wife, cause they let the devil step in and creep up in your life. Hey, L-O-I-C-E, come and help us out, please, cause we all in desperate need and need to learn to plant our seed. We gotta grow as a...
Good evening, everyone. This is Let's Talk Truth, live broadcast. We want to welcome each of you here today. Those of you that are listening, if this is your first time listening, we just thank you for being here and for being on board. Today, we're going to talk about something that's near and dear or should be to every heart of individuals that's here to maintain their community. We're talking about community and crime and who's to blame. And we have a tendency to throw blame where blame doesn't really belong. But we want to shed some light on that particular area. And we're thankful for our guests that's here today. We have Shannon, we have Dijon, we have Courtney, and Mr. Motivator and Louise. So we're going to give everybody an opportunity to share your thoughts and to see if we can come up to some sound answers. We have been inundated with news reports and different scenarios, what people think need to happen in order for this to stop and in order for that to stop. There are too many killings in our schools, and so we need to do gun control, knife control, bat control, whatever else people are attacking others with. You know, are we going to go down to where we do our nail file control? You know, for those of us that choose to go the old-fashioned way and hurt somebody with a nail file. So crime is crime. We are having people, our young men, young boys are being killed because they're breaking into someone's houses. They're robbing old people. They're killing women. Pardon me. So these are particular crimes that affect our community. So if it affects our community, it affects our family life. So these are the things that we want to talk about. Now, this evening, Let's Talk Truth wants to examine will there be a cure or is there a cure for certain crimes that has nothing to do with gun control or any other type of control that our government is bringing into our midst, that we're not having to control any of those things. And we have our police force and we have different things, but the police are called in after a crime has been committed. So what we're proposing today is that there is a cure. And our true crime unit, we'll call them the PCC, which are parents, community, and the church. Every neighborhood has a parent, every neighborhood becomes a community, and every neighborhood has a church in it. But these three entities don't work together to do what they're going to do. Now, as I say at the beginning of every broadcast, we're not here to preach to anyone, but we're going to be here to offer solutions. And these solutions, if we think they have to be Bible-based, because that's the only way to tell the truth. If our show says, Let's Talk Truth, then the truth we have to tell, and there's only one truth, and that truth belongs to God. So he has to be the foundation for everything that we lay out here for you. And hopefully we can persuade you to see it our way and maybe come up with a positive cure or a positive solution for everything that's going on. Now, the thing that prompted me to talk about things like that, I meditated for days on different things that's going on in our lives that's really affecting our communities and affecting the growth of our children. And if you look around, we're really in sad shape. So one thing we're going to do, we're going to discuss that cure we were talking about and the true crime unit, namely our parents, the community, and the church. So these are the three entities that have to come together in order for there to be a positive change in everyone's life. Now, what I'm looking at, what I'm proposing to every one of you has nothing to do with it stopping crime completely, but it will change the course of it, I firmly believe. And not only would it change the course of it, it will absolutely change how our lives are being negatively affected by it. So we want everybody to have free reign and give us your thoughts on everything. We have free reign on everything that's going on. So let me say this. We have, I looked at a show. It was Oprah Winfrey's show on Sunday evening. I looked at it briefly, and I don't know if I pronounced this lady's name correctly. Iyanla. She's a life coach, and she was on there, and they were talking about absentee fathers. And they had a number of men on there who had never met their fathers. The fathers had bailed out on them. Some of them had just met their fathers in the as they were older, and they were really working through the problems that those men were having because their fathers were absent. Well, I read something that there was a question asked, and I read it on the computer, and it kind of disturbed me because someone asked the doctor, says Dr. Boyce, should Oprah and Iyanla be teaching men about fatherhood? Now, that was the question. This young someone, I don't know from the name, it says, only a man can teach another man how to be a man. A woman can teach another woman how to be a good woman and how to recognize a good man. I don't take advice from women on what men think. I take advice from a man on what a man thinks. And I would hope a man takes his advice concerning women from a woman, not a man. Psychology can teach us only so much about the opposite sex. Nature teaches you everything. So to know manhood, fatherhood, etc., a man should be teaching it. When I saw that, it sort of disturbed me because it lets me know now with people who think that way, why everything is so out of sequence. So my thing before I give our guests the floor and let them speak, I said this in reference to that. I said, God puts in a man everything a man has to have when he's born. And a man has to have the ability to protect and to provide. God puts that little thing in there. But that little, those two little entities have to be nurtured in a man. And guess who God assigned to do the nurturing? A female. He assigned their mom to do that nurturing. So as mom nurtures those two, that protection and providing that's within a man, then you get to the point where then God steps in, and guess what he does? God gives the increase. He gives the increase. So with that said, who is the first person that will teach your man, the males, will teach the boys?
The
mother has been set aside. So the mother is female. So I would say this, if that was a man who spoke those words and said he didn't listen to a woman, I guess he probably grew up a very disobedient child, because his mother was there to tell him what is what, and you have to listen. And the scripture encourages us to listen to both the father and the mother. So I don't know where people get off that the mother doesn't have what it takes to raise a man. So so when you see things like that, you wonder now, you see why things are off kilter and they're not being distributed properly because of thoughts like that. Now, I'm going to let my panel, if you'd like, talk on that first before we move into anything else. Do y'all have any thoughts on that that would kind of offer a positive resolution when someone says something like that?
I do. I think that I'm a woman, yes, but I have a brother who was raised by a mother. And I think that society has put a stigma on young boys saying there's certain things they don't feel comfortable talking to their mother about. But I think they want to separate that because of the genitalia issue. There are certain things children don't feel comfortable talking to their parents about, period, because they feel like, oh, I'll be embarrassed, I don't know if that's normal or whatever. The first interaction a child has, no matter what gender, is with their mother. When you give birth, whether it's C-section or, natural childbirth, when the baby comes out, they lay the baby on the mother. They don't go lay him up in the daddy's arms. When you have a C-section, they bring the child around and kiss the mother. They don't take it to them. The mother nurtures the child, feeds the child. Not saying that the daddies that are present aren't active in that, but they don't have the same connection as that mother. A mother carries a child. You build a bond with someone who's been living inside of you for 9 months. You've been feeding them, taking care of them, not being able to sleep, trying to make sure so they're comfortable, feeling their elbow inside of you, feeling all this kind of stuff. So I think that, for a person to say that because you are not born with the same genitalia, that you can't tell that person. You know what a woman knows what it takes to have a good man. So whether you've had a good relationship with a man or not, you know what a man's supposed to be, or what your depiction of a man is supposed to be, and that's what you'll input into your son.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean you can't do it.
Exactly.
That's just my thought.
Anybody else?
Well, yes. First of all, I would like to say that having a father figure around is nothing but a big cop-out. That's, you are enabling people to do things that they wouldn't normally do. And I say that because I didn't have a father around when I was young, and I'm not worse for wear. I don't have a criminal record. I have a job. I take care of myself. I have no social disabilities. I can talk with people. I have a wife. I have a child. Things like that. I don't seek I'm not dysfunctional in any way, and no, relationship wise or anything like that. I'm not dysfunctional. So for me to say that for me to listen to people talking about how they were so deprived because they didn't have that they didn't have a father figure. That's a bunch of baloney.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't take it. It's supposed to take two parents, but it doesn't take two parents because God allowed it to. Because we mess up, so He has to put in place things to save the faith. And
mm-hmm.
we marry people out of the wrong thing, and we make children. And God is not going to throw away the child because of the parents can't get along. So what happens? He makes provisions for them to raise the child. What do you need? Fathers there for protection mostly. I mean, I have affection toward my daughter, but in essence, my affection goes towards the protection. I'm not going to let her be dirty. I'm not going to let her be hurt any kind of way. I think I'm a little too protective when it's getting, her getting hurt and things like that. But just to say that, I'm just going to be a bad seed or that I'm dysfunctional because I have a father, that's what the society wants to put, because they don't know what it is, so they just want to label it something so they can move past the situation. And frankly, I'm tired of that solution or answer to a problem, that there's no fathers. I just I'm on unemployment and all this because I have a no father. No, you're stupid. That's why you're done. You're like that.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to listen to anybody. It's not about father figures or anything like that. So quit with all the crying and all the blame and stuff when in actuality it's on you. I have no pity with people like that at all.
Okay? I thoroughly agree with you. And when Oprah's show was going on, I agreed with everything the doctor was saying. And the one thing that I would have added when she was encouraging people to forgive that absent man that was absent.
Exactly. I forgave my dad, and I was grown, and he asked me for forgiveness. And I called him Dad. I said, Daddy, why do you ask for forgiveness? Because I don't hold no ill will towards you.
Exactly.
Because you only knew what you only could do. And I don't hold no, you didn't have to, you wasn't there, but it's not like I just died because of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love you. I mean, you're my dad. And that's why I think, but people want to, hold grudges for something somebody did, and then we call ourselves good people. For those who don't want to be Christian, don't believe in Christianity, you want to be good people, but you don't want to forgive anybody, so you're not letting them off the hook.
Mm-hmm.
So they have that guilt trip is following them around for their whole lives and things like that. So what we need to do is we need to forgive people like that. Forgive those dads. And moms, quit trying to talk bad about the dad in front of the kids. You are creating dysfunctional right there. Just step up and be a better mom or whatever. Or if it's just the dad taking care of, step up and be a better dad. Quit downing the other parent in front of the child. And that's the biggest step. That's what you create a dysfunctional man or dysfunctional woman in a single parent home.
That's
because
true.
they down the parent in front of, oh, he's no good, she's no good, she's a crackhead, what does a 3-year-old need to learn that her dad is a crackhead or,
exactly.
what is
how I look at it is you lay down with it. So this is my situation because I came from a single parent home. My mother raised me. I knew who my father was. I called my daddy a mail order daddy for a long time because I never saw him. We talked on the phone. I received gifts in the mail, things like that. Did I have any interaction? When I was sick in the middle of the night, it was my mother who was in there cleaning up, throw up, making sure I wasn't sweating. I had the measles, chicken pox, who was there for my first father-daughter dance, who was there for all of these things. My mother never once, never, never, and I repeat, never said anything bad about my dad. And I would ask questions. Mommy, why didn't my daddy come and see me? She said, well, baby, he works a lot. He lives kind of far, you know, and with life, you know how mommy has to work all the time. Your daddy has to work double hard. For the longest time, I thought Garland was a faraway place. Until I was five years old. I could read. I was sitting in the front seat, and my mom was driving, and I never forget. I remember her face kind of like, oh, Lord have mercy, because that thing said Garland City Limits. And I said, hey, we haven't been driving that long. This is not that far. My daddy can come see me. And she's like, it's more than one Garland. I mean, I want people to say, you shouldn't lie to your child. But that's not really lying. That's preventing me from building some kind of angst or hate or becoming dysfunctional when it comes to, well, I didn't have no daddy, so I got to do this. A lot of women blame it on the fact that, oh, I'm promiscuous because I didn't have no daddy. And I'm just looking for love in all the wrong places.
No, you just like that.
Exactly. So I will agree with that because it brings about a dysfunctional feeling. If you think about it, everything that children are taught, what they, other than taste and things they can feel, if they're taught to dislike or be afraid of something, it's because an adult has taught them.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And if you teach your child that one of the parents are wrong, whether it's the mother or the father, I'm saying you can have a stone cold, like Brother Courtney said, a crackhead for a mother, a crackhead for a father. But it's up for whatever parent is in your life, a caregiver, whomever God has put in your life, it's not for them to bash that person at night, have that child that needs to pray for their parents' deliverance.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if there's the knowledge where they understand something's wrong. You don't put your idiosyncrasies, should I say, on your child. You don't, oh, well, this is what it is. You know, he's smoking rocks and he's doing this. So you have that child. Children can't form correct opinions on when to turn something on or off.
Yeah, they have no boundaries.
They have no boundaries. So if you tell them that people who act like this, that's a crackhead. It could be somebody who has had a seizure or stroke. He's a crackhead. Kids don't have that thing where they can separate what is what. There are depths, there are gray areas in everything.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is black and white. There's a lot of gray.
I agree with you. And the only thing I will tell, and we're going to move on to how our young men and young women falling into the crimes into our communities and the things that can be done for it. The only thing that I would add to any show when... pardon me, when we're trying to get teaching our young men, forgive your fathers. People don't know how to forgive. So you have to tell them your dad could only give you what he had in you to give. That's all he could give you, is what he had in you to give. No one can give you something, and I know y'all have heard it over and over again. Blood from a turnip, you can't get blood from a turnip. So whatever, no, there's not a blood turnip. So whoever it is that's in your life, that's absent from your life, you can only forgive them if you realize they absolutely don't know how to give you what you're looking for. Now, let's move on to something else. We're talking about crime. We've had so many excuses as to why. I interviewed some young men today. John was one of them. He had a young friend that came by the studio named Cortland. And I asked Cortland to give me his take on, I said, tell me what are your thoughts as to why our young men fall into the crime? Why do they do things against the law? And he explained himself very well. He said he gave me four reasons. He said, number one, education. He said, number two, poverty. And he gave me three. And he said, the third one is they feel that that's the only way out. So when he explained, I understood what he meant about the education part, meaning that if you are not taught properly, then you will do a lot of things because you're not educated in the right way. Then he said poverty. So I asked him if, and those of you that's out there, I'm going to pose the same question to you. If you had to compare the scripture says that there is nothing new under the sun, nothing, which means nothing is happening today that didn't happen years ago. Nothing is happening today that didn't happen years ago. So what we have to understand is you've got to, so that takes that excuse away right there. The things he was telling me are the same things we had to face when we were growing up. And I asked him, I said, tell me, young man, I'm going to tell you where I came from, and you tell me the difference in then and now. I told him that growing up, I grew up in the country. I rode the bus to school from the fourth grade till I graduated high school in the 12th grade. I had two pairs of shoes a year, one at the beginning of school and one at Christmas time. Then I had about four pairs of underwear, two at the beginning of school, two at the middle, about Christmas time. I had two pairs of socks. One at the beginning of school, one about Christmas time. Mm. Now, but every day I went to school, I was clean. We didn't stink. My mother made my clothes from dresses that belonged to the older white women that she would tear up and make me clothes that looked stylish for my age. Now, I graduated high school. I'm a minister. I have children. I take care of children. I have never been to jail, prison, or anything of that nature. I said, so young man, tell me this. What is the difference in me back then and you today? And so I want to get your take on this. Anybody?
I'm going to play devil's advocate for me, because I know there's nothing new under the sun,
mm-hmm.
but as time has gone on, the devil has perverted so much in people. See, back then, the majority of every black person was in the same boat. So you didn't have competition, or you weren't made to feel inferior because you didn't have something. Now, if you stink or something like that, I don't know what stinking person has never been talked about.
Well, we had them in our school, and we didn't talk about them.
Well, that was utopia. So I'm going to say it's not so much nothing new under the sun. Nowadays, if you don't come to school, for example, when I was in high school, kids was the biggest thing going. My mother bought me every color pair of kids I had: lime green, blue, orange, white, yellow, pink. Had all the color kids. There were some kids in school who couldn't afford kids, so they went to the Payless and got those little regular white girl tennis shoes. No offense to nobody, but that's what they were called. Got those little tennis shoes. They were talked about because it meant you were of a certain caliber monetarily. Your family was poor. So when you are telling someone when they're coming up,
And all they are is berated for being poor and not having or not having access to something. Unless you have a strong foundation at home.
Now, you're hitting the nail on the head. Because
I'm saying if you don't have a strong foundation at home to let you know, it's okay. Forget them. Everybody has something different. As long as you're clean, nice, and this. But you have mothers who come up, we were talking about sons, or if you have mothers who come up with these sons, who at the time, remember, Payless had something called Pro Wings for Boys. You talked about you were Pro Wings.
But now, listen, let me say this, and I understand that. And you said something that will take us back to this cure we're talking about. Well, you know, we said the cure comes in the PCC, the parents, community, and the church.
That's true.
The parents, let me tell you, we were dirt poor. I remember my mom made $28 a week. That was her check. $28 a week. Now, we were poor, but the foundation was we didn't know we were poor. And when you don't know you're poor, you don't act poor.
Because people didn't treat you that way.
Because we didn't allow them. Do you know people thought we had money?
But it's how you carry yourself.
Exactly.
But if you think about it, nowadays, you can go into any school, and you're segregated depending upon your popularity. When I was in school, because I had things, I hung with the seniors. There were freshmen who could not hang with the seniors because they didn't have things. They didn't know things. They didn't know things about the world or fashion or anything like that. Now, for example, if you have a son, he's going to school pro-wing. He get picked on every day. You have somebody introduce him to, you know, where you tired of wearing them pro wings?
Mm-hmm.
I can show you the way you can get out them pro wings.
I got to understand
when
that.
When it first introduced to him, he goes and does what it takes to get that. You can't tell me that mother or whomever the parent is at home don't know about it. But you tell me why they don't say nothing? Because they're tired of struggling. And when that son come and lay a whop of money in there and they ain't got to pay no, their electric bill ain't got to worry about being cut off without no lights. They don't have to worry about being not having no water. They ain't got to worry about, oh, we got to go up here and all of us share a pack of ramen noodles. Them mothers have a blind eye. Them fathers have a blind eye to them selling dope. Why? Because it contributes to the success of that household.
Exactly.
And ultimately, everybody wants to be out of a hole.
Exactly. Now, I understand what you're saying. So this hits where the first seed comes in, community. If you are in the community, and you know little Johnny's mom has turned a blind eye to little Johnny selling drugs, then this is where the community needs to step in. There are people in the community. There are fathers in the community. Little Johnny may not have a dad in the home. But if little Johnny doesn't have a dad in the home, Mr. Jenkins down there, he's a dad. All of these things. Somebody in the community needs to step up and talk to the young man that's being trapped, and also not only talk to the young man that's being trapped, but the church needs to move up and surround that mom and say, "Ma'am, how do you want to lose your son's life at the expense of paying your light bill?" Now, I will say this before you say something, Courtney. I was a single mom. I worked every day. It was challenging for me but I kept my kids looking neat. I sent my daughter to high school. Everybody thought she went to the cleaners, took her clothes out of the cleaners. But she didn't. My Saturdays were spent cleaning my house, washing, and ironing my kids' clothes for the next week. I ironed them and starched them and creased them and made sure when they went to school, they looked decent. So this helped with their mindset. Now, when you have parents who not stepping up, doing what they're supposed to do, then there's a ram in the bush. Some community, some person in the community needs to step up and do something. But now we have people that don't care about other people. Am I right?
You are so correct. Going back to, and then this is going to lead up to what you're saying about what happened back then and then now. Back in, shall we say, the day, people were taught to work for something. You did backbreaking labor to make sure, and people don't understand that. Now, if you were in the city, you didn't really do too much backbreaking, but from where you were at, the men did backbreaking labor.
Of course.
Bending down, I'm just saying, you know, you using as men, bending down, cotton picking, roping cattle, but you come up now, we don't want to work as young people. They don't want to work hard for anything. As the as Shannon was saying, the parents, they go out and strive to get their kids everything, and then their kids don't know how to work for it. So if they fall from grace and have to, and they can't get those things, then they're going to do anything necessary to keep up with the Joneses. And what's happening is you're seeing that kids feel they're not accepted if they don't have a certain shoe, certain brand of clothes. So they say, I have to get it by any means necessary. So they're putting their lives on the line for some shoes or for some clothes, and the mothers are being enablers, because if I'm mothers and fathers are being enablers, because like as Shannon was saying, if I'm coming home from working and I know I didn't buy you any of the new shoes that everybody wants now, phone pots, if I didn't buy you those $200 shoes, $240, how did you get those shoes? Why am I not questioning? Why I'm not questioning where you got those shoes from?
Mm-hmm.
And just like so, just like Shannon was saying, that they mask these things,
mm-hmm.
and crime comes around because people turn a blind eye to it. And the more it starts little, you know, I might steal some shoes. Then it starts bigger and bigger and bigger till I'm breaking in people's houses and stuff. And to say that, you know, I use me for an example. I didn't have a lot of money when I was younger. I didn't. I didn't grow up with everything I wanted. I can remember, you know, I laugh about it now, but I wanted a remote control car. And I told my mom specifically, I said, Mama, for Christmas, I said, Mama, get me one without the cord on it, because I want to be able to let it go down the street. So I opened up my gift, and it had the cord on it. I felt a little down, but then I realized my mom had just got us a house. She didn't have the money to get us all our Christmas that we needed.
Oh, sure didn't, because I remember that year I got just some suspenders, two pairs of suspenders, and a radio system that had an 8-track on the side of it.
And hand-me-down.
But I picked up that big old speaker, baby, and we had a time.
But
justify my love.
I didn't feel compelled to go steal anything for my shoes. I saw, it was my friends used to come over the house with flights. They were big back in the day, and Jordans and all of this, and I, you know, but I didn't think about those things. I mean, I didn't think, I just had to have them. I was concerned with going outside. My mom really gave me what I needed. She gave me some shoes to go outside and get on that bike and play football in, and I didn't need all the other stuff. You know, that's fluff. But what I needed was that house that she got, because we didn't have nowhere to live when we came here to Dallas. So I needed that. So I don't blame her for that. It didn't make me want to go commit no crimes or anything like that. And when I got in high school, I went to one of the, you know, Dallas is black, you know, predominantly urban high school, you know, and I was met with people that were saying, Courtney, you know, you can make more money than what you're doing. You could help your mama out. And they tried to introduce me to drugs. Now, when I'm saying drugs, not to use them and smoke them, but to sell them. And not little stuff, major stuff. Now, it looked good because they were just going to give it to me, and I give them percentage after I sell everything. I give them a percentage to help pay back for the drugs that I bought or whatever like that. But I looked and said, you know what? I'm better than that, and I'm not going to go down that route. Because when what happens is when we go down that route, we actually say we don't love our mothers, even though we're trying to put our mothers in places and our mothers and fathers in better housing. You're actually saying you don't love your mother and father because, one thing, you're throwing your life away. Another thing is that there is competition. You're not just the only one selling dope or committing crimes. And if you're robbing or whatever, there are certain territories, boundaries that you might cross. And who better for them to get at, because they know they can't get at you, you have bodyguards. If you're big time, you have bodyguards. You move in convoys or whatever like that. So they get your mother or your father or your sisters and brothers. Now, there go innocent people, but you're trying to make a better life, but it's wrong. You're trying to get it the easy way. You don't want to work at a McDonald's. You don't want to work at a Meineard or wherever y'all at. Y'all have still have Safeway, Skanks, Alphabet. You know, you don't want to work at a store or anything like that or cutting yards or starting small. You want that big money fast, and it's not going to happen. And this is prevalent in the urban community. We don't want to work for anything.
Mm-hmm.
And we get a bad name, and then when other races call us lazy and stuff, well, they're actually kind of right because we don't want to work. We want it right then. I think that this is our thinking. I think that I just got out of high school. I have no skill, or I didn't graduate, but I think I ought to be able to go to Walmart and get the manager job, making, you know, $85,000 or $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
No, you're not going to get that. You're going to get minimum wage because you have no experience.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that falls back on the parents. Parents need to understand, but just like Shannon said, they turn a blind eye. So then it goes into the community. And when I say community, and the host, you know, the community leaders, that's your peers. People my age didn't say, man, this is not where that is. You know, or you know how we talk. You know how the young people talk. They talk with their little slang and all that kind of stuff. I'm not saying nothing bad about it. But get it through to your friends and your homeboys and homegirls that that's not what it is. Let's work towards something because we want to do away with all these stereotypes. But if we keep on going down this route, all we're doing is more crime, because you don't see none of this crime. You don't see no homicides like it is in any other part of cities but urban cities.
And, you know, I want to let you know how correct you are, because I looked at the FBI stats as far as the area in which crimes are predominantly done, and it says under most circumstances, crime is more common in urban areas. And it says there are several reasons for this. In the first place, more people live in cities and towns than in the country. And so people often live close together in urban areas, and this makes crime both more tempting and easier to conceal because of the area. And so this is what we're talking about, and it says it's not media, but blacks make up 12.5% of the total population, and they are 40% of the black population in prison. They make up 40% of the prison population, yet we're only 12.5%.
It's a disconnect somewhere.
It's a disconnect someplace.
And it's in the mindset of the people.
And how do we get the mindset to change? I promise you, it's got to be parent, community, church. Parent, community, church.
I want
to
pose a
question.
That's the only
way
you're going to
do.
And I know this is not my show, but if you will, at the end, give people your phone lines or email or whatever, because I want somebody to answer this, because I've been asking this question for a long time. How does a community know there's an active drug house in their community and they won't
ignore it,
get it out of there?
Mm-hmm.
How is that? But yet you scream for a better life.
Why are drug? Why are drug houses allowed to stand in community?
And they're known drug houses. Like, people can go and point to the house and say, that's a house.
I can answer the four-letter word.
Why?
Fear.
But why should a whole community be feared for a couple of guys?
Let me tell you why, because what you don't realize is, if you have one person who's a whistleblower, that person's going to get blown up. If people are afraid to stand together, not knowing standing together is what gets rid of it. People turn the blind eye to things that they know they should turn the blind eye, that they shouldn't turn the blind eye to.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't affect them. Because they feel like as long as we don't bother them, they won't come over here bothering us.
But it bothers us. I mean, it
affects
us. But
not knowing
it
affects the community, because here you go. Now, wherever there's dope, there's crackheads. You got more crackheads coming to your neighborhood, and the more people you got, the kids coming trying to steal your stuff.
And not only that, you don't want your young kids, your grandkids,
walking to school, passing by.
Yeah.
Or what if someone from a rival drug thing comes over and starts shooting up the place, and then all of a sudden, you in a crossfire, you land in your bed sleeping, you get blown away.
Again, I say we go back. We keep these initials in mind. PCC. Parents, community, church. And I feel like our churches are too busy worried about who's gay in the congregation.
And money.
And you're not getting out doing. Don't you know that God says all things are possible? He said, where two or more touch and agree, he's in the midst. It seems as though if churches would stand and pray against a drug house,
When they were young, there wouldn't be no drug houses. For example, if you take back in the day, if you knew Sister Marilyn's family didn't have no food, what they do? The women of the church got together and took groceries over there. Sister Marilyn wanted to feed it. Don't bring me no groceries over here. No one looked at her or belittled her or talked about her after that.
Mm-hmm.
They took groceries to bless. If you saw that Sister Mabel's daughter didn't have any panties, you didn't put on... Come here, Sister Mabel. Your daughter ain't got a nasty to draw. No, you didn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
What you did was pull Sister Mabel to the side and say, you know, Sister Mabel, here, this is something right here. I thought you would give a little sack with some underwear in it. I thought this would bless your daughter. Or things like that.
Exactly.
People don't do things like that anymore.
I'm
in trouble down the street, the neighbor whooped my behind. And when I got home, my mama whooped my behind, too.
And let me tell you this, that all of you are so very right. And you talk about, I know some experience. I know a man, a pastor, called to be a pastor, and he was looking for a church, and God blessed him with a church building. He saw the church, he wanted it, and he didn't have the money to pay for it. But he called the man that owned the building and told him he wanted it, and the man said, well, I'm going to fly in and to Dallas, and I'll meet you at this particular bank, and we'll do the paperwork for you to get the church. Well, he went, in all his innocence, he went to the bank and waited for the guy to bring the paperwork. When the guy got there, all dressed up in his suit and his sharp shoes and everything, he said, how much money did you bring to pay for this bill? He said, I don't have any money. He said, I have $18 in my pocket. That man jumped up and was so loud, everybody in the bank heard him. You wasted my so-and-so time. Man, that won't pay for my plane ticket. I flew here to sell you this building, and you got $18? Oh, he was so, the pastor was so embarrassed. But sometimes you have to be embarrassed for God to come to your rescue. A gentleman in the bank heard him and walked over, threw his card down on the table, and said, how much is the bill? Here, go ahead and get it for him and write that check out for him. Things like this don't happen in our communities anymore because we don't put the church in it. All we do is put ourselves in it. So I said that to say this. The church building he got was right next door to a dope house. They would start having church, and you'd hear everything going on next door. So one day, the pastor said, I'm so tired of this. They joined hands. They prayed. They pointed at that building and they declared that church was going out of business. And what happened? In a few days, the man that owned that house came by and he said, I'm going to sell this house next door. You want it? I see you trying to build your church here. You could use that house. So that's how they gained access to that house. The dope dealers, the drug heads, and everything cursed them. Oh, when they tore that house down, they burned. And just to show you how silly, nobody knew they shouldn't have been in hell and all that dope that they burned. But it was drugs all under the floor of the building, everything. But they burned everything. It was needles. It was everything. But they gained that property. Now, I'm telling that story to say this. Whatever the community doesn't want in it, God has the ability to move it. All you got to do is, the parents, the community, and the church needs to come together and allow it to happen. Because I firmly believe that that's the cure. That is the cure for crime in the communities. That's the cure for 40% of black population having the prison population for blacks. It is absolutely horrible that our little young men, once they hit 20, some of them are in jail, prison until they're 30. They don't know what's going on outside, and they come up and they have this jailhouse mentality, and they don't think that they're gonna can make it any other way. We have got to change that, and we've got to change it by changing the minds of our people, men and women, and have better parenting. These parents, you got parents now, you're worried about your boyfriend, not your husband. You're sneaking out. When I talk about baby boomers and stuff like that, I think about now women who cheat on their husbands who cheat on their wives. All of this cheating, and you can't take care of your family and your husband because you're too busy trying to take care of your boyfriend.
Exactly.
And that is unacceptable. God is not going to stand for it. And if we don't accept what everything is going on and start involving our parents, if you know you have deadbeat parents, give them a new mind. The community and the church need to come together, start praying for them, put them in a position where there is nothing, no place to go but up. And like I was saying to Shannon, she and I were talking, and I was saying this: if you are tired of living the life you're living and you want something better, there's only one direction you need to turn. And you can turn 50 more million directions, but until you turn in the right direction, you're not going to ever change and do nothing positive. There will continue to be crime in the community. The police are called in after the crime is committed. We're trying to get a mind change before the crime is committed. There's a before and after picture. Before, no police. After, the police. We have 4 minutes left. I have thoroughly enjoyed this because, and I hope that we have given somebody something new to think about. Stop worrying about the word snitch. If somebody tell you something about snitching, just stop and start praying for them, because I promise you, somebody needs to snitch and do something. So email me at letstalktruth333@yahoo.com. That's let's, L-E-T-S, without the apostrophe, letstalktruth333@yahoo.com. If you will do that, one of my guests on my show today proposed this question. He'd like some feedback on it. Why are drug houses allowed to stand in our neighborhoods when we know that they're there? Why? So this is what, we want some feedback on that. We want feedback on it. And send us an email to letstalktruth333@yahoo.com. If you would, go to my blog page, www.loisbullock.blogspot.com. And understand, anytime you want to talk to us or do something, let us know. We are working to do everything we possibly can to do the right thing, and we're doing it to say, let's talk truth. I want to thank all of my guests for being here today, and want us to get a new mindset on what we do. Let's start stepping in, being a positive community. I went out and did early voting, and we're just, I have a new mind. I want to work with our community leaders to help make our community a better place to be. And hopefully they can depend on me and maybe call upon me to do some positive things in the community, because I am commissioned to help underdogs, the underdog, the young kid. I know we do scholarships and things like that for people to go to college, but I try to hit these kids that won't have a chance to go to college, that won't have a chance to do what they need to do. So if we just, you know, if we work, we can do all of these things. What we need to do is work positively together. If you know parents who are not functioning the way they should, if you know parents who who's absent, because we have as many absent mothers as we do fathers. We have some mothers that's in the home, but they're so busy trying to make their kids grow up before it's time to grow up. So they're just might as well be absent as well. So let's start being positively connected to our parents and to our communities. Let's start to communicate with each other. Let's communicate with the churches. And if one pastor should be able to call on the other pastor and so forth in order to get things going. So I'm just motivated today. And I want to thank all of my guests for being here. I want to thank my staff for making things possible to do whatever it is we try to do every Tuesday night. And hopefully you will join us back here again next Tuesday at 7:30 to 8. And we just thank you for being here today. And again, this is Lois Bullock, and this is Let's Talk Truth, and I am loving you with the heart of God. Good night.